U.S. Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland points fingers in the impeachment inquiry.
He said the quid pro quo was directed by Rudy Giuliani. And he also said what many witnesses have told us, which was that President Trump directed not just Ambassador Sondland, but Special Envoy Kurt Volker and Energy Secretary Rick Perry to work with Rudy Giuliani. President Trump wanted Giuliani to sort of take the charge on this.
Israel is likely headed to another election, the third in a year. And let me just say this, filler phrases, we all use them, politicians love them. We'll have the ones to listen for during tonight's debate. It's Wednesday, November 20th. This is the PM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. In Israel, former military chief Benny Gantz has failed to form a government before a Wednesday deadline. Our Dov Lieber has more.
What happens now is there's a 21-day period where if 61 lawmakers can decide on a prime minister, then Israel can still have a government. But if not, then Israel will be going to its third elections in 1 year, and those elections will probably take place in early March.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had earlier failed in efforts to form a government. The September elections left neither Netanyahu nor Gantz with a majority. The head of a third party, former Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman, said earlier on Wednesday he wouldn't back either Gantz or Netanyahu. His party's votes were crucial to securing a majority for either candidate. General Motors has filed a federal racketeering lawsuit against Fiat Chrysler, accusing its rival of corrupting union negotiations. The unusual legal dispute is related to an ongoing federal investigation into corruption among leaders at the United Auto Workers Union and Fiat Chrysler's labor relation executives. GM is accusing Fiat of corrupting the collective bargaining process in past years to solidify a labor cost advantage in Fiat's contracts. Fiat calls the suit meritless and said it assumes the lawsuit was meant to disrupt its negotiations with the union, as well as its plans to merge with Peugeot maker PSA Group of France. The minutes from the Federal Reserve's October meeting came out today. They show officials were concerned about trade and global economic growth. They were also worried that weakness in manufacturing and business investment could threaten the economic expansion. The Fed cut interest rates last month for the third time this year and have since signaled a pause in further rate cuts. Gordon Sondland testified before lawmakers today for day four of the public hearings in the impeachment inquiry. Sondland is the U.S. ambassador to the European Union and a key figure in the Ukraine controversy. In his testimony, he said that he worked with President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, to arrange a White House visit for the Ukrainian president in exchange for investigations into Burisma and the 2016 Democratic National Committee server hack.
I know that members of this committee frequently frame these complicated issues in the form of a simple question. Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes. Mr. Giuliani conveyed to Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, and others that President Trump wanted a public statement from President Zelensky committing to investigations of Burisma and the 2016 election.
Joining me now with more details is Wall Street Journal reporter Shelby Holliday. Shelby, we heard a lot from Sondland just in his opening testimony today, where he admitted there was a quid pro quo. Connect the dots here for us. What are the major takeaways from that testimony?
So that was a big moment when he emphatically said that this White House meeting was conditioned on Ukraine announcing investigations. And that also brought up another interesting point that he said he never heard about talk of Ukraine having to start investigations or complete them. It was only about announcing investigations. That is what Rudy Giuliani and President Trump really wanted. He said the quid pro quo was directed by Rudy Giuliani. And he also said what many witnesses have told us, which was that President Trump directed not just Ambassador Sondland, but Special Envoy Kurt Volker and Energy Secretary Rick Perry to work with Rudy Giuliani. President Trump wanted Giuliani to sort of take the charge on this. So in his testimony, Ambassador Sondland said, we didn't necessarily want to work with Rudy, but we understood that we had to if we wanted to get something done on Ukraine.
Let's actually hear a piece of that where he says that. He did name a lot of names today.
Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, and I worked with Mr. Rudy Giuliani on Ukraine matters at the express direction of the President of the United States. We did not want to work with Mr. Giuliani. Simply put, we were playing the hand we were dealt.
So Shelby, Sondland says he was acting in good faith and that he wasn't initially aware of any improper behavior.
So that's true. He said he was doing what the president told him. He also said he didn't realize the investigation into Burisma meant an investigation into the Bidens, at least not earlier on in the summer. That raised a lot of questions for Democrats, but he maintained that. You know, he's under oath. He said that before. He wasn't backing away from that. But he does acknowledge, you know, in hindsight, that that's what that meant. And he said when he saw the Bidens' name come up on the phone call, he realizes in hindsight, Burisma meant Bidens. But he also defended claims that he was somehow working in an irregular channel with Giuliani. We've heard a lot of people critical of this, quote unquote, irregular channel. And he said, I'm not sure how someone could characterize it as irregular when you're talking to the president, you're talking to the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor, the Chief of Staff. He brought emails and text messages that show he was keeping everyone in the loop on this push for investigations. And so it brought a lot of people much closer to the heart of this investigation.
What have we heard from Giuliani and President Trump in response to today's testimony?
So President Trump actually came out on the White House lawn while the hearing was going on, and he had written some notes down, and those notes were what Sondland said President Trump's response was to a phone call. Sondland called and said, what do you want? And President Trump said, I want nothing from Ukraine, no quid pro quo, no quid pro quo. And Trump read this comment again, even though Sondland was saying this in this very public televised hearing. President Trump came out and also emphasized that, which points to his defense that President Trump, in phone conversations, denied this existence of a quid pro quo. Giuliani took to Twitter and also said no quid pro quo. He also said his involvement in all of this began with Special Envoy Kurt Volker's request. We know that's not necessarily true because Giuliani himself has said that he became interested in the Ukraine investigations back last November. He's been working on this for nearly a year. But he distanced himself from Sondland and said, I had very little contact with him, and Sondland is just speculating.
Now, Sondland, before this public hearing, he had revised his earlier testimony, which was behind closed doors. Is that now calling his testimony from today in public into question?
Well, that's a fair question, because a lot of people were wondering whether or not you could take him seriously, whether or not he'd be credible if he already had to amend his testimony. And that amended testimony was very significant. He came back and later said, oh, I do remember telling the Ukrainians that they would get the aid if they announced investigations. That's huge in terms of this investigation. Today, he tried to clarify why he amended testimony, and he tried to defend himself by saying he wants to provide more accurate testimony. He just has basically been blocked by the White House from accessing his phone records, his State Department emails, his State Department documents. He said he's not a note taker, but hearing some of the testimony from his colleagues has jogged his memory. So we'll see if Democrats and Republicans alike take him at his word or make any effort to get those documents.
During a break in testimony earlier today, House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff called Sondland's testimony, quote, among the most significant evidence to date. Where does this leave us?
Well, after today, I think you'll hear a lot more questions of people very high up in the Trump administration, Secretary of State Pompeo, Secretary of Energy Rick Perry, Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. All of their names were brought into this today. And again, not just with testimony, but with emails and with text messages. For now, Democrats have two more witnesses that they're going to hear from tomorrow. It's unclear if they'll call more or if they'll just stop and say, we have what we need. There was this big phrase used in the hearing today, which was 2 + 2 = 4. And Sondland never said that he spoke with President Trump about the aid to Ukraine, this nearly $400 million aid to Ukraine. But he did say, I presumed, because everything else with respect to Ukraine was held up and we're at this logjam, I presumed the military aid to Ukraine was also conditioned on the announcement of investigations. And so 2 + 2 = 4. That was a phrase the Democrats used, and Sondland liked it and went along with it. Republicans hit back and said, yeah, in mathematics, 2 + 2 = 4. But your presumptions, 2 presumptions + 2 presumptions don't equal a fact. And the fact is President Trump denied a quid pro quo, and they seem to still be focused on the fact that President Trump, in conversations with the Ambassador Sondland, never said there was a quid pro quo. He denied it. And I think that's where you'll see Republicans and Democrats continue to differ.
All right. Certainly more to come. Wall Street Journal reporter Shelby Holliday joining me here in our studio in New York. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For our full coverage of the impeachment hearings, please head to our website, WSJ.com, or the WSJ app.
First of all,
I want to say the fact of the matter is,
let me tell you why.
By the way, at the end of the day,
by the way, there were
members. If you've heard any of the 2020 presidential hopefuls speak, you'll probably be familiar with some of these go-to filler phrases. Ahead of tonight's debate, our team took a look at the ones candidates use the most. Joining me now in our studio is Wall Street Journal associate graphics reporter Lindsay Huth. Lindsay, what did you find out about our current crop of presidential hopefuls? Which phrases are being used the most here?
Yeah, so we looked at these phrases that sort of between the answers to the questions, they lack content. Some of the top phrases we looked at were variations of say, like I want to say or let me just say. That was the most common type of phrase used. It was also very common to say some iteration of tell, like I will tell you, let me tell you. And then there's a lot of the fact is or the fact of the matter is, and that's the favorite phrase of former Vice President Joe Biden in particular.
Okay, so what did you find out about particular candidates? Who's using these phrases the most?
Yeah, so Biden is the candidate who uses them the most, far and away. He has 77 instances of using these phrases during the past four debates. And when we looked at the rate at which they're used per 1,000 words spoken in the debate, he still uses them at the highest rate. So he uses about six phrases for every 1,000 words, whereas the rest of the candidates averaged about 2.6 phrases for every 1,000 words. So other top candidates were Senators Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders. And that is something that we're seeing, that Biden and Sanders have two of the longest political histories among the candidates. And this might be something that reflects having a lot of political experience, that this is how politicians talk. And these are stock phrasings that you learn in through political experience, particularly in the Senate.
What about some of the major reasons for using filler phrases? Is there a tactic to this, or are they sometimes just sort of an involuntary verbal crutch?
Yeah, our linguists we talked to said it's mostly an involuntary crutch. And it's something that we all do when we're talking, and it's heightened because of the specific environment of a presidential debate. You're under high pressure, you have limited time to get all of your talking points out, and so these phrases are a way to temporarily hold the floor while you're formulating the rest of your answer. They also signal to the listeners to listen up to the next phrase that they're, the next statement that they're going to make. And they convey a sense of certainty and authority. And the reasons that they rely on such familiar phrases is that they're not as cognitively demanding to produce. So they allow you to hold the floor while you're formulating the rest of your answer. We also talked to some people about other reasons that these phrases might exist. A historian we talked to, Dan Rogers from Princeton, placed this in the historical context for us and said that the presidents and presidential candidates have been making an effort to sound more like the everyday folk. And this is, again, a feature of our everyday language, is it's highly cliched. We're constantly venturing phrasings and then backtracking and in our daily conversations. So this is something that makes it seem less stilted and more conversational. And he says in the story, all the candidates want to be someone that you'd have over for breakfast. And this can be a reflection of that.
So a lot to unpack there, and certainly something to keep in mind as you watch the debates tonight. The Wall Street Journal's Lindsay Huth joining me in our studio here in New York. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
Thanks.
And the fact is, you can find more of our analysis of filler phrases on our website, WSJ.com. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.